Welcome to Biohackers Lab, a place where we talk to smart people who are figuring out how to improve health in interesting ways. Join us to discover how you can biohack your life, your body, starting today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Biohackers Lab. I'm your host, Gary Kerwin, and on today's episode, I have Emma Williams. And the reason I've got Emma on the show is because we're going to be talking about using the ketogenic diet for the medical management of different conditions. So just to give you a little bit of background on Emma, Emma is the mother of Matthew, who's the name of the organization that we're talking about today, which is Matthew's Friends. And just to give a little bit more background on Matthew, he started having epileptic seizures when he was 9 months old. And because of these seizures, he ended up suffering brain damage from them. So with Emma's journey, she was trying to discover how to help Matthew. And she discovered the ketogenic diet when he was about 2 years old. And of course, like any mother, she asked her neurologist at the time if that was an option to help Matthew. And she was told by that neurologist at the time, no, it doesn't work. And so she didn't receive any support on how to start the diet for Matthew until he was only 7 years old, when she was able to start him in a trial with Professor Cross at a hospital in London. And what happened was, within 2 weeks of starting that ketogenic diet, Matthew was already had a 90% reduction in seizures. And by 8 months onto the diet, he was off all his medications at the time, which must have been a massive achievement just to see that difference in Matthew. And just to give an update on Matthew, he's now turning 23 in September of 2017. So he's doing very well. And how Emma has stayed busy in the ketogenic world, because she's now a leading advocate for the keto diet for different therapies. And she's also a patron for loads of different international organizations and organizations within the UK. Plus, she was awarded an MBE by Her Majesty the Queen in 2013. So, Emma, there's only a touch of your biography and your background that I could give. I know there's so much more that you're involved in already, but thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
My pleasure. Anything I can do to help.
Great. So I'd like to start off with talking about the difference here when we're talking about a low-carb or ketogenic diet, because I've had other guests on the show where we've talked about ketone bodies and how that's good for the brain using exogenous ketones. But that was Dr. Brianna Stubbs down in Oxford. But she was also excited about using ketones for medical management in neurological conditions. And that's exactly what epilepsy is. And then I've also had Emily McGuire on, a nutritionist from Scotland. And we've talked about eating low carb or ketogenic for just general health. But today we're actually talking about ketogenic for medical management. And yeah, that's where I'd like to jump in today. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe then starting off with, how does a ketogenic diet help, in this case, epilepsy?
The short answer to that is we're not quite sure. We know that for some reason, being in this ketotic state, it seems to have an anticonvulsant effect with people with seizures. The reason behind that, we're not quite sure. There is still research and theories going on behind it. We also know that some of the epilepsy syndromes, such as Dravet syndrome, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, West syndrome, they seem to respond fairly well to the diet, Duchenne syndrome being a particular one. So there's a lot more research into the causes of these epilepsies and for the reason behind how the diet might work. But the actual concrete, why does the diet work? We're not sure why it has the anticonvulsant effect. All we know is that for two-thirds of patients with intractable epilepsy, they have a positive outcome using the diet. They'll have a drop of 50% or more in their seizures, equivalent to any new anti-epileptic drug that there is out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a massive improvement. So two-thirds of children who have that intractable epilepsy respond favorably
to the diet.
To the diet. Yeah, I mean,
they may not become completely seizure-free, but they will certainly, those figures show that approximately two-thirds of children that go on the diet will have a greater or 50% or greater reduction in their seizures, which is equivalent to any new anti-epileptic drug that is available.
Yeah, I mean, a 50% reduction, therapeutic reduction in symptoms is gigantic. So, I mean, for me, that leads me on to my next thought, too, of how do doctors generally refer their patients to, say, an organization like Matthew's Friends to start implementing a ketogenic diet? Is it well accepted within the medical community that you're finding?
It is better now. Certainly when we first started, when Matthew's Friends first started, it's the reason I started it back in 2004, there was nothing. Apart from Professor Cross's trial, which was the reason Matthew was able to get on the diet and 144 other children were able to get on the diet and have it properly looked at, and the fact that Helen's trial proved the efficacy of the diet once and for all. That was the game changer for us. Before then, we were bashing our heads against brick walls going, this diet should be used, and they're saying, oh, there's no medical evidence to support it. Without the research into this, we can't change the medical profession's attitude towards it. So the clinical research has always been a big part of what we do and what we support. So Helen's trial came out and proving the efficacy once and for all, and that finally meant that hospitals and NHS centres in the UK couldn't ignore it, because it was a proven medical treatment that we had the class one evidence they were asking for. So Professor Cross's trial was certainly a turning point, and that cannot be undermined or trivialised in any way. It was a game changer around the world as far as getting the diet availability.
Wow, so it took until 2004 before anything could start changing. So
2004 was when she started the trial that we started getting children on, but it wasn't really until 2008 when all this started getting published and the interim results of the trial started getting published that people were starting to take note and, yes, actually we've got to do something about it and we've got to start offering the service.
Okay.
So there was still that gap in between where Matthew's Friends were building awareness and we were working. We had obviously Professor Cross and other medical professionals working with us to build awareness of the diet and advocate the need for it. But it was the trial, the conclusions of the trial, that was the game changer. That gave us the ammunition we needed to go and sort of beat hospitals around the head, for want of a better phrase, and go, you need to be offering this service because, look, it's an option for these children. So it was really important to be able to do that. And now we're quite fortunate in the UK that in most tertiary paediatric centres, there is a dietetic, there is some ketogenic dietetic time. It may be minimal. In some places it's full-time, other times it's just about 1 or 2 days. But there is somewhere across the country that most children could get referred to. Some have bigger waiting lists than others. But the situation is better than it was, but it's certainly not good enough. And now we're having the same problem with adults, because now there are a lot of adults that want to looking at this diet to manage their epilepsy, and we don't have enough service for adults. So we're doing a lot of work on clinical research for adults, and we're also funding adult centres as well, trying to get more adults involved, or the adults that want to try the diet to manage their epilepsy that may have had years on medication that have got a really poor quality of life at the moment.
Yeah, that's I can hear that struggle you're going through, where for you as a mum who has a child with the condition and to have seen the change in Matthew and then to think, how is this not accepted in general, must be so frustrating.
It's a killer. It's a killer. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully things have come right. I mean, I work with a lot of professionals from around the world, and, you know, Professor Kossoff and his team got a consensus statement together of some of the leading experts around the globe. And our view is that if the first two appropriate medications fail, then the ketogenic diet should at least be discussed and offered. It should no longer be the last resort. So thankfully, with a very dedicated group of passionate professionals as well, we're managing to get all these papers and literature done that we can start proving the case and keep fighting the corner. It's certainly better than it was, but it's not as good as it should be. So we keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the fight that you're going through too is generally what I see most low carb doctors having to go through. So there's other doctors, like I've interviewed Dr. Gary Fetke down in Australia too, or Professor Tim Noakes, who advocates using a low carb diet, but just that even them at their level, how they are butting heads and not able to say, like, use your diet as a therapeutic means to improve your life as a base, that it's always seen as a last resort.
I feel sorry for Tim Noakes. I mean, we recommend his book to some of our patients, especially some of our adults, because it's great. It's better. There's a lot of resources out there. But like I say, the thing that we're concerned about is those for chronic conditions that need medical management and there's nowhere to turn to. For people that are healthy and don't have any conditions that maybe want to adopt a low-carb lifestyle for health, I think that's great. I think the eat well plate that we're all having rammed down our throats at the moment needs changing. And, you know, I work with the public health collaboration that are trying to do that as well in the UK, because when you look at it, we all agree with the fruit and vegetables and that kind of stuff. Absolutely, that side of it. We need more fruit and veg in our diet. But it's the third of our plate that's supposed to be starchy carbs, you know, that I have a bit of a problem with, you know, and it's all eat low fat. And I'm like, no, don't do this. You know, I can understand people wanting to eat low carb. It is a better way of eating, you know, learning what I have, working with, I employ dietitians, we work with them all the time, and some very passionate dietitians that look into this. So I agree with the, we should all be cutting our carbs and cutting the sugar out of our diet. But when we start going to really low carb for chronic conditions and we're forcibly changing the metabolism, then I'm a very, very strict advocate of you need medical management to do that, because there's a lot of other factors we need to play in.
Mm-hmm. And with Matthew's Friends organization, you've got the resources because you've got access to dietitians who know how to medically manage someone in that situation. Is that how you help?
There are three branches to Matthew's Friends. So there's the charity, which supports all families, children and adults throughout the UK, Ireland, wherever we are, will support the families going through the diet. And that means we produce a lot of practical literature, shopping guides, things like that. So the dietitians that are working in the NHS hospitals can access us for copies of these booklets. We have a keto kitchen where our keto chef Mo will develop recipes for parents that maybe are struggling, because it can be quite daunting when you first start and you've got a very sick child as well. And it's a new way of thinking. They have to weigh food and they have to be, these diets are designed for each individual. So it's not a question of one diet fits all. We have to find the right level for that individual that's on the diet. Some people do better on higher ketones rather than lower ketones. So it's finding what's best for that individual. So there's a lot of fine tuning that goes on and it can be quite daunting for the family. So what we do from the charity side of things is support that family all the way through. So we have support lines, we have email contacts, we have recipe development kitchens, we have a lot of practical publications that we bring out in order to help. Plus we have an electronic ketogenic manager, which is people can, you know, plot their macros or plot the fat, carbs, you know, and protein through the day, so they've got their prescription right. So it's all a program which they can do their meals on. So there's lots of resources around us that we will give to families. So that's more the charity side. And we also fund new centres within the NHS. So we've just put some more funding. We're about to put some more funding into Aberdeen. We've opened an adult centre over in Ireland. You know, so we're there to help all the centres around the country. So that's the charity side, as well as do the clinical research. We opened our own clinic where we employ dietitians and neurologists to manage these diets, not only for children, but also for adults, because there was a severe lack of adults with epilepsy that wanted the ketogenic diet. So people can be referred to us from all over the country, but we are only there for where there is no local service. Obviously, if there is a local service to you, we will always put the people back to the local service. They need to go to the local hospital. Part of our clinic is also for research into new areas. So although half our clinic is managing patients with epilepsy, both adults and children, the other half is charity funded, which funds patients that have brain tumour. And this is an area we're looking at with a ketogenic diet at the moment. It is going towards clinical trial. It is very early stages. So we've done a huge case series of patients, which is over 50 patients we've managed with brain tumour through that. And treating patients with brain tumour is different to treating patients with epilepsy. There are different ways, different practicalities to take on board. There are different medical conditions and different medical treatments. There are different drugs, you know, with there's radiotherapy and chemotherapy to take into consideration with them as well. So it's learning the whole practical aspect with them. Obviously, we always do it with a medical board attached to us. And so the clinic is working towards that and working towards clinical trials for brain tumour with our medical professionals.
Okay.
So that's the clinic side of things. And then we have the education, which is Keto College, where we train new teams. We have a team of mentors from around the world, and then they come in and we've written a course to train new medical teams that want to provide ketogenic therapy. So that's the kind of three arms we've got.
Wow. Like I said, you know, back in your bio, how busy you are. I mean, just that alone, that's incredible.
And it is incredibly busy, but it's incredibly fulfilling. And, you know, I'm very lucky that I've got a fantastically passionate team that, like me, have seen the results of this. I mean, not only for Matthew, obviously, my inspiration, I wake up and get smiled at every morning from him, you know, which I was told he'd be dead by 12. Or in a home, and he's now 23 coming up, living at home, goes swimming three or four times a week and wakes up with a big smile on his face. You know, that's my inspiration. But also the thousands of families we've spoken to over the years, the adults that couldn't drive before but are now driving because their seizures are under control, because their quality of life is better. Every day you get inspired by these stories. And I've got one of the best jobs in the world. I can see these people get better. And there's nothing more that can drive you and the team here at Matthew's Friends.
And you, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I think is great, where it must be so rewarding that something so powerful, where you mentioned how Matthew had the change already within 2 weeks. That you notice. Do you see that type of difference even for the adults, where within a month, these people, the adults who go ketogenic to start managing their own neurological conditions or metabolic conditions, they see the changes like really fast just by changing the way they eat?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, with some people, it will take a bit longer depending on how many medications they're on. I mean, remember, we've had some adults come to us that are on 6 and 7 medications. And it's ridiculous, you know, how you're going to fight your way through that little lot to try and, because they're all sort of competing and they feel awful and they feel depressed and they can't work and they're still having emergency meds to see that change. And for those patients, sometimes it takes a bit longer. You know, we normally say you need to commit yourself for at least 3 months, 3 to 6 months maybe for the adults. So we'll start making changes slowly with adults if necessary, if they want to take one step at a time. And then you see the meds start coming down and you just see they just start to go, I just feel better. And also they're in control of their treatment. They're not always being told, just take this, just take that. Now they're actually making choices of going, oh, well, actually, I've got some control over my treatment and I want to get involved in this. And you see them, one, get better and then engage fully. And that is just phenomenal when you see that. Their face lights up and they find a new ingredient or they've done a new recipe and they go, oh, I really like this and this is great, or I've gone out. I mean, we've had photographs of one of our adults where she took a keto shake out nightclubbing with her. And it's crazy, but she's there, we're getting a photograph and she's dancing around and she's got a keto shake with her because before she couldn't actually do that. So when you've gone, she had to be in bed by sort of 7 o'clock at night because she was so tired. And now she's out clubbing with her friends. No, she's not drinking alcohol, but hey, it's a small price, but she's got her keto shake with her. And she's having it in the nightclub. She's getting her energy and she's dancing the night away and having a fabulous time. And that kind of change is immense and it just does your heart good.
Yeah, that's such a nice story too. And it highlights the benefits of the ketogenic diet for our neurology, no matter what age. So we've been focusing even on small children, but you could be a young adult, an elderly person, but it's just it's an intervention that can be used to improve your life situation. And I'm just interested, a girl like that then, because with epilepsy and nightclubs with the lights, do you know this is just a side thing other than diet, which I guess
she didn't have photosensitive epilepsy.
Okay. So she was okay with that.
She didn't have any problem with the lights at all. It's only those with photosensitive epilepsy that will have that kind of problem.
Okay. All right. And that's a different, again, that's a different kind of epilepsy to what the ketogenic diet would be helping? Or have you even had photosensitive?
The ketogenic diet can help that kind of thing. It helps all types of epilepsies, but not everybody with intractable epilepsy or with epilepsy has that photosensitivity.
Okay.
So it's like Matthew. He doesn't have that either, so it doesn't matter with lights with him.
Okay. So now we've talked a bit about the clinics. So we're focusing mainly on the UK at the moment because this is where we're both based. So if someone within the UK wants to get care under the NHS, they can refer to you and then be able to liaise with their local health authority to.
They can, if what they'll do is if they want to contact us first via the charity, MattysFriends.org, or email me, Emma@MattysFriends.org. We're here to advocate for the patients. So if they want to know about it, first off, they can come and visit us. They can get a load of information. They can watch tutorials on our sites and on our YouTube page. So they can get an idea of the diet, whether they want to go for it. Mm-hmm. They can contact me and I can put them in touch with their local centre. Obviously, I will check down the list, see which their local tertiary hospital is, or they can even ask their own doctor where their nearest tertiary centre is, their main big neurology centre. And hopefully, if it's children, there should be, hopefully, a ketogenic dietitian they can be referred to. If there is no local service whatsoever, there's nowhere they can be referred to, then they can be referred to us. They can ask their doctor to refer into us. With adults, it's exactly the same. They can do the same, but there are fewer centres. So obviously our centre is quite top heavy with adults because there aren't enough adult centres around. Hopefully that situation will change over the years as it has done with children. And we keep working towards that.
And I see that you've also got Matthew's Friends organisations now internationally in Canada and New Zealand.
Yes. So we've got registered branches in Canada. That's led by a dietitian called Jennifer Farbe. She's doing a fantastic job with her team out there and bringing all the Canadian dietitians together and networking out there. So they're doing a hell of a great job out there. And in New Zealand, that's being led by Susan Hill, who's a parent of a child that went seizure-free on the diet and then is still seizure-free to this day. Daniel is doing really well. And she advocates a lot with health boards getting services into New Zealand. She has a medical board and she does a lot of patient advocacy as well. So I'm very lucky that both areas are run by very passionate individuals.
Yeah, because actually today I just referred, well, I mentioned your organization to someone in Australia because he's got a boy, I believe, with type 1 diabetes and was just looking at how do you help a child in that situation go low carb or ketogenic diet. And I said, you know, contact your organization because he's likely to be put in the right direction and to get the assistance that he needs.
We would certainly, in that assistance, try and put them in contact with a dietitian. The full ketogenic diets aren't being used so much in diabetes at the moment. I think we need to look at the low-carb diets for diabetes. Certainly, there is a GP in London that has slashed his med bill by putting his diabetic patients on a low-carb eating regime. So I would definitely say have a chat with him. His name is David Unwin,
mm-hmm.
And he's part of the public health collaboration as well. So I think certainly ketogenic therapies are being looked at and low-carb eating are being looked at in a lot of these conditions. But like I say, if you've got diabetes, certainly don't go and do it on your own.
Yeah. So your organization too, we've talked a lot about epilepsy, but that's not the only metabolic condition that you can assist in, though, because I did mention the diabetes here. There are other metabolic situations?
There are other, there's a metabolic condition called GLUT1, which is glucose transporter deficiency, where patients are not able to metabolize glucose, so it can't get across the blood-brain barrier. So we have to bypass that. So the ketogenic diet is really the only treatment they have at the moment in order to get the energy to the brain. Now, we've certainly got better over the years of diagnosing GLUT1. It's still not as good as it should be. And Matthew's friends have got a sub-branch of the GLUT1 UK group. So we try and look after all the patients in with GLUT1 in the UK because they have to be on ketogenic diet long-term. What frightens me with this is that GLUT1 can be mistaken for a lot of ataxia, epilepsy. So I have a fear that there are many adults out there that actually have GLUT1 but are being treated for epilepsy and other conditions. That scares me, that possibility, because even if there's a lot of damage that's already been done, even by putting them on a low-carb diet now or a ketogenic diet now, their quality of life may well improve. So it's a question of trying to find them and raise awareness of GLUT1 as well, which is part of our job.
Okay.
So there are some, you know, metabolic disorders being looked at. There are trials going on at the moment looking at ketogenic diet. Obviously, in certain types of cancer, we're focusing on brain cancer. There is MS coming up. There is Parkinson's being looked at. There is autism being looked at. You know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's kind of a list. But without the clinical trials, without the clinical research, we can't get people to engage, or professionals, or have enough dietitians on board to be able to manage it, to do it. They're all going to be saying, we need the medical evidence. So this is why we invest quite heavily in clinical trials. And we work with other charities, like for our brain tumor project, we work with the Astro Brain Tumor Fund. We know the diet, that's our speciality. They know brain tumors. So it makes sense to partner up with these other charitable organizations, these other organizations, to come together and make this a more viable option.
So can we get a little bit more into the diet here and how you did touch on it earlier that it's going to be personalized. It's so your macros and your level of fat, for example, is going to be customized to your particular situation. Generally, how strict are we talking for a therapeutic effect of nutritional ketosis, like macros wise, would you say?
Well, that depends. If we're looking at children, that would be calculated by a dietitian. So it would depend on their age, their height, their weight, their growth would be taken into consideration. So, and it depends what type of diet. Because there are four kinds of diet that are generally used for medical treatment. So you've got a classical ketogenic diet, which is based on ratios, where we give 4 grams or 3 grams of fat to every 1 gram of protein and carbohydrate. So that's the strictest version you can have.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have an MCT ketogenic diet, which is worked out on percentages for a certain medium chain triglyceride oil is given with each meal and snack, which produces the ketones. So it's a little bit more liberal on the carbohydrates, but it's still quite restrictive and you still have to weigh every gram of food. So those are the two strict ketogenic diets. And then we have a modified diet. First originated with Eric Kossoff in the States, which is the modified Atkins diet, where we tend to give 10 or 20 grams of carb a day. Okay, and then liberal fats and free protein, or normal portions of protein. What we found in the UK, we've kind of adapted that even further to a modified ketogenic diet where we will start maybe higher on the carbohydrates, maybe 30 grams, but then start bringing it down to where we're getting the ideal level of ketones. Plus, we'll also be careful on the amount of protein that's eaten, because we know if we start replacing all the carbohydrates with protein, you're not going to get the ketosis. So that has to be managed. Plus, we might give guidance on how much fat is used. But as far as how much we would give this particular individual, then that's calculated to that person. So the dietitian will have in front of them and she will work out, or he will work out, the prescription for that individual.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, that's so enlightening, just to show people the spectrum when it comes to the ketogenic diets, of going from the classical ketogenic diet, which is very, very high in fats.
That's about a 90% fat diet, 80 to 90% fat diet, the classical.
So could you just maybe help someone visualize what is a 90% fat diet? Like what is someone eating in that situation? What does it sort of look? What does it look like? Is it just? Are you just like spooning butter in the morning?
No. In the old days, that's what it used to be, and that's why some doctors used to get a lot of negativity about, oh, you've got to drink cups of oil and it's disgusting and you can't do that. It's a lot different nowadays. I mean, if you go onto our website and you'll see the classical recipes, there are loads of 4-to-1 classical recipes on there, which are really tasty. It does look different. And the biggest shock for families are the size of the meals, because obviously you go from a lot of carbohydrates, you know, to high fat. And high fat has, you know, more than double the amount of calories per gram than fat and than protein and carbohydrate does. So automatically, the meals look a lot smaller, even though you're probably getting the same amount of calories.
So it's that visual difference where you go, oh, I used to have a big plate of rice and something, and now it looks like a smaller plate, but it's still packed full of nutrition. So that visual relationship with food.
It's the visual shock that's the biggest one, especially for families with their children. And I know I had it with Matthew. The first time I made him a 4-to-1 meal, I looked at it and thought, he's never going to like this. Game over. He's going to be hungry all the time. But you're not actually hungry, because it's pretty much the same amount of calories he was having before. It just looks it in a different way. It's difficult for me to stand here and go, well, this is what it looks like, because without showing you pictures of recipes, which are all on the site. And you can see Mo, our keto cook, on our YouTube channel making 4-to-1 recipes. And we can make things like, we batch up things like rolls. So you can still make a ketogenic roll. And we've had over, 10,000 hits on that YouTube channel. And she makes it with sort of ground almonds and psyllium husk and egg. And it's like a bread roll. So we can make different things, but we just have to use different ingredients.
Well, I'm going to link to all. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be linking to all these resources in the show notes for people to watch, because I think that is very useful to be able to visualize what a meal looks like too. And I'm so glad that you're creating a YouTube channel.
Yeah, I mean, the YouTube channels, we've got, you know, thousands of subscribers there. And this is why we do it. And we do new films every year. We're just about to do the next batch. You're going to be filmed in September, October. Because it's important that families have that ability, that in the privacy of their own home, when they may be feeling a bit, oh, I don't know what to do, or when they're relaxed and can take it in, it's in small bite-sized chunks. And they can see Mo actually making it. And there's the recipe to it. And this is how you do it. And don't worry, and this is what it looks like. And it's important to visualize it. We do a lot of visual tutorials and things, because it's important to hear our professionals speak. And not every family can get to conferences and meetings and things like that. So we try and put the conferences and meetings as much as we can online, so everybody can access it.
Mm-hmm. And I think also I can imagine it helps to make it more real for some people, you know, because television or watching programs is a way of educating people and just making them, is converting just text that tells you what to do, and makes watching someone make it makes it fun and think, oh yeah, definitely that's a good thing for me. So I'm looking forward to watching some of them myself. I'm gonna have a watch of them. So I'm just thinking there then, you've got all those resources now to teach people and parents how to create these dishes. And you've mentioned the MCT part too. And I take MCT oil just to help raise ketones. So I'd be interested, have you found with all the different MCT brands out there, what's the sort of the efficacy, sort of the, are you finding that they're achieving what they're meant to achieve, or are there things that people need to watch out for when they're looking to purchase different MCT oils?
I mean, we use prescription products for our patients because they're obviously medical patients. So we get the MCT oil and MC products that are on the listings for prescriptions on ACVS listing. We're tending to use MCT a lot more in the modified diets as well, that if we've got somebody that's maybe struggling and doesn't want to lower their carbs, but we're trying to boost ketones, then this is where the modified diets and the individualization comes in, that we may have somebody that can manage it and is really happy on 25 grams of carb, but the ketones are really low. So we might use MCT to boost those ketones, like you said, you use it to boost yours. But we would tend to prescribe a product. So we would go to the list of the prescription products available. And you have to be careful with how much you give, obviously, because MCT can have, if you give too much, especially we see this in younger children with a full MCT diet, it can have some nasty gastric side effects if you give too much too quick. So we always find don't have MCT on an empty stomach. Don't have too much of it in one hit. Or if you are going to sort of increase your amount, do it slowly so your body can adjust to it and get used to it. Otherwise, you might end up with a bad tummy.
And I hope it sounds like when I did that interview with Brianna Stubbs about ketone salts and ketone esters and how the esters themselves have less of a gastro side effect. I hope that sort of can help your situation too with when they become commercially available. So
when they become on the prescription listing, I think it's exciting times to see what's coming up. I know there's lots of research into ketone esters, ketone salts, and I've seen, it worries me sometimes with sometimes what I see available or what's being marketed, especially for patients with vulnerable, you know, conditions. We tend to stick, and the dietitians in the hospital tend to stick with what's available on prescription because we know that's gone through the tests and everything. I'm not saying that these other ones haven't. But I'm looking forward to seeing the medical future for these products and how they can help.
And what you meant, when you were mentioning with ketone levels and measuring them in the children, how often are parents having to measure their child's ketosis in a day?
Normally, when we're first starting and we're fine-tuning the diet, we'll get them to test twice a day. So that can be blood testing, so a little finger prick. But if we've got a child that really, really doesn't like doing it, then we'll do a urine dipstick. So there are two types of different ketones, obviously, but the blood ones are kind of more accurate for fine tuning. But if we've got a child that's kicking off and that won't do it, you don't subject a child to that. So we'll use the urines as a guide. I mean, the whole of the clinical trial that Matthew was on, we used urine testing as a guide, and it was fine.
Okay. And the breath testing, I don't know if you know the device from Scandinavia.
Yeah, we do. We've tried that. At the moment, we are not using that every day. We are sticking to urine and bloods.
Okay. And so that's good to know. So twice a day is what you're having to do in medical management situations.
Yeah, that's during the first 3 months when you're trying it and you're getting things fine-tuned and you're finding the right level. Once they're stabilized, you don't continue to stick them with a needle sort of twice a day. We'll maybe go over to urines then just for a bit of a guide and maybe say just do blood finger prick test maybe once a week, something like that, just to check. Okay. So it doesn't have to be all the time.
Yeah. And then I'd love to know the age ranges. So you mentioned how Matthew started off with his seizure when he was 9 months old. What is the youngest patient or child that's had to seek assistance through your organization?
We don't take, because we're an outpatient facility, we don't have inpatient facilities, we only take from about a year upwards. Okay. We advise infants, and that's a year and under, that they must be started in hospital because they will need to be an inpatient. There's formulas you can have. There's a 3-to-1 formula available for babies. But the babies that are normally got infantile spasms that are young and under a year old, we would say to start the ketogenic diet in hospital as an inpatient.
Okay, so there is help for parents who have babies.
Yes,
definitely. Okay, great. And then I'd love to know, because you know, the whole reason, this is why I'm so glad I got you on the show, because back in 2012 when I was first learning about ketones, it was children with epilepsy that fascinated me, because seeing how ketones or a high-fat diet helped our neurology, our brain, function more efficiently, it did get me thinking then, you know, how important this could even be as an adult, just for general health and helping my brain function better, which inspired me. But I'd love to know then, are there any concerns with staying on a very strict ketogenic diet in these children? So in like Matthew's case, is he still on a ketogenic diet? And have there been any, or are there any sort of known issues for children growing with the ketogenic diet, like bone growth or development milestones, anything like that?
Matthew's not on the ketogenic diet anymore. Normally we find the patients with epilepsy, only we sort of say if the diet's successful, you stay on it for 2 years and then we'll give you a trial of a wean off. And some children will be weaned off quite successfully after 2 years, seizures won't come back, diet's done its job, they go on lead a normal life. Okay? Mm-hmm. So for some reason we can have the full miracle, the full what everybody's wanting, that's the holy grail of the diet. You go on the diet, your seizures stop, you come off all medication, you wean off the diet after 2 years, never come back. Sorry. Game over, there we go.
I just want to highlight that point. That's incredible. So using it as an intervention for 2 years, and then you can stop that into the dietary intervention, and as you said, it's like a miracle. They don't seizure chronically after.
It's done its job.
Yeah, so talk about how people are on chronic medication and you can use an intervention that's chronic in a sense because it's 2 years, but it's not for life.
No, it doesn't have to. Yeah. It doesn't have to. Obviously, if you've got GLUT1, then obviously it's a long-term because they have a metabolic disorder. But no, normally for epilepsy, we say you stay on it for about 2 years. And even now, there are some of the professionals that are looking at it, questioning. Professor Eric Crossoff is one of them, going, do we need to be on it do we do a trial off after a year? Has the diet done its job then? We don't know. Shall we see? So there are questions being asked now. But at the moment, we advise that they stay on for 2 years.
Okay. And that's the strict ketogenic diet. And are there any health concerns for childhood growth factors that...
Yes, there are. These are medical diets, and therefore a lot of families come to us and they say, we want to go on a ketogenic diet because it's natural. The ingredients you give on the diet can all be natural. Everything can be organic, if you like. That's no problem. What we're actually doing, though, isn't natural because we are forcibly switching the metabolism. So we forcibly take away the carbs to change the metabolism from burning glucose to burning fat, and we feed the body fat to give them that energy. Yes, it's a backup mechanism. So some people will argue that's natural. It's what the body does when it runs out of glucose. But we're kind of forcibly doing this for a long period of time. So the body can survive on it. It's not a problem. But there are always side effects to these things. And this is what we have to be careful with. And certainly those that have got these chronic conditions, we've got to be careful with them. So long term, I think there is an issue with growth in children, that if they're on it for a long period of time, their growth might slow. Okay? But normally when they come off the diet, you find that growth catches up. And then for some of them, they might be a centimeter or so shorter than they should have been. I think that's what they're being looked at the moment. From my own personal experience, if I talk about Matthew's growth did slow down the time he was on the diet. But I kept Matthew on the diet for 6 years because back then we didn't have sort of the rules going in, and I was too frightened to take him off the diet.
Mm.
So Matthew was on there for 6 years. His growth did slow down. But when I took him off the diet, he, on a better phrase, grew like a weed, and he's now about 6'3".
Wow.
So if that shortened his growth, I'm not too worried about it. The other long-term issues with diet in children is the possibility of bone weakness. Now, there are some centres that are doing DEXA scans on these children after they've been on the diet for a while in order to make sure that they've got they're not leaching calcium out of their bones and there's not some signs of bone weakness. Having said that, yes, they're looking at it in the diet, but we also know that being on long-term anti-epileptic medication can do the same thing. So we're looking at the DEXA scans and there's more information coming out. But there are certainly growth issues, and there could be possible bone weakening issues. So all these are being looked at. And obviously with the normal day-to-day side effects of the diet, you know, constipation is a very common one, and gut problems, which can normally be managed quite, you know, with diet manipulation.
And what do parents think also from a cardiovascular wise? So they might think, oh my goodness, I'm giving my child lots of fats. Am I going to give them some sort of cardiovascular disease by doing this too? Does that ever come up? This is where I've
been to a lot of meetings, and there's a lot of, in fact, that a couple of months ago, I was at a presentation by Dr. David Diamond from America, and he did a fantastic presentation, and it sticks with me because there's absolutely no medical, clinical evidence supporting fat giving you chronic heart disease. Okay. Fat in combination with high carb, high fat, puts on weight that you can, you know, that's no good for anybody. But this cholesterol argument that fat increases cholesterol, which blocks the heart arteries, apparently no medical evidence for that. Although that's not my area of expertise, I am quoting somebody else on that. Mm. But I do recommend people to read the Gary Taubes books, look up Dr. David Diamond and their presentations, and they are far better explaining this.
Yeah.
Than I am, because I'm just a lay person that's going, wow, we've been sold a real dozen over the years. And it was Ansel Keys, I think, that convinced the American population that it was fat that was the cause of the problem, which is quite interesting when you read up about him.
Because I can imagine that as a parent, they're probably not thinking of the bone weakness potential side effect. All they think initially must be, oh my goodness, fat. And that concern, or even doctors, I can imagine that they're thinking that what's going to happen to this child long term if you put them on some sort of diet.
I mean, some doctors have turned around to some of the families and gone, oh, if you want to put them on a ketogenic diet, you might as well come straight out of my office and go straight down to the cardiologist's office.
Wow, that's so disappointing here.
Yeah, but what they don't realize and then what they don't know, and these are people that don't know about the diet, but actually when you think about it, the fat we're feeding the body is actually being used for energy. It's not being stored. This is where the medical management comes in. And when you explain it to the parents and you're going, but the fat what gives us the weight problems or whatever is when we're eating, you know, fats together with carbs. So the carbs are being converted to glucose and that's being used for energy. But the fat's sitting there and it's not being used for energy, and that's what's giving us the extra calories we don't need. But when you're taking away the carbohydrates and you need the fat for energy, the fat's not being stored, it's being burned. We're using it all the time. So once you can kind of get that theory over to the families, then normally they're great with it and they go, yep, that's fine. And don't forget, being medically managed, the dietitians are also looking out for things and making sure, you know, regular blood tests are done with the families so we can check that all the vitamin and mineral levels are right, because obviously these diets are supplemented. You know, the dietitians will make sure everything is medically safe.
I'd just be interested, as a side note, is cholesterol checked in these children just for fun, just to see?
Yes, it is.
And
normally
are there any patterns?
Yeah. Initially, the levels go up, and then they drop down to normal again.
Okay. Yeah, because I haven't published the interview yet, but I've got a cholesterol biohacker. So his name's Dave Feldman, and there seems to be a subgroup of people who, when they go on a high-fat diet, their cholesterol skyrockets, and then you know, it's the debate of why does it do it in certain people and is there any risk involved? But I just thought the children with epilepsy, that must be a fascinating group just to see like what some of the patterns must be there. And I guess that also comes around just to finish this point on the discussion is that do studies look at that factor in the long-term studies for using the ketogenic diet for children, that they try to appease people to show, look, these children like Matthew, who started very young and already in their 20s, they're not riddled with cardiovascular disease. Do they highlight that in the research articles at all?
Yeah, they are looking at that long-term. I mean, it's, you know, they're going back through papers. I can't quote papers to you here, not without looking through the records. There are just so many of them.
Yeah.
But they do look at it. And the general consensus seems to be that initially, when you first go on the diet, for most people, there's always the exceptions to the rule. Their cholesterol levels will, you know, initially go up and then they level back down again and go back down to normal. So there's no real long-term issues on that from what we know at the moment.
Okay. And so you've mentioned how the diet, the very strict ketogenic diet to manage the neurological condition might only be needed for 2 years.
Yeah.
Do you find then that you try help these patients long-term that they naturally should be more low carbish long term, also just to help them, because they've had the situation where their neurology was susceptible and it was healed through the ketogenic diet, but then even long term, maybe a low carbish type of diet is more preferential for them?
Certainly, from my own experience, when Matty sort of came off the diet, like I said, it took me 6 years to pluck up enough courage to get him off the diet. I'm still, Matty can have what he wants, okay, for the most part, but I'm still careful with the amount of sugar and stuff that he has, so I don't kind of load him up too much. And funny enough, the one thing I find that I have never been able to feed him since he's come off the diet is rice, because that Matty's always had a few seizures left because obviously he's got a chronic condition and brain damage, but he's still the 90% controlled as he was before the diet, but he still has a couple of little seizures a week, yeah, but they're very short duration, normally subside fairly quickly.
And you find rice.
The one thing I can't feed him is rice. So, and I don't know why. I haven't got to the bottom of that at all.
So if you give him some rice, you notice that he potentially has
more seizures.
Wow.
He'll have more seizures, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I've nailed it down to, and I don't know why.
And this doesn't matter. Like, someone might go, oh, but maybe it's, you know, white rice versus brown rice, but rice is rice.
Any type of rice. I can't do pudding rice. Anything that's got rice in it, he can't have. It's crazy. I've literally done it down, and I've been strict with, you know, writing everything down, and I've absolutely nailed it to that. He can't eat it. All the things when he comes off the diet, he can eat everything. He can have a piece of cake and he's fine. He cannot eat white rice. He cannot eat rice. And I don't know what it is that sets his system off. I still haven't got to the bottom of that. Children are a mystery. Yeah. I just don't know. Matthew said yes. But a lot of the children, a lot of the families, when they come off, they obviously, when you've been on the diet for a long time, you have to wean it off slowly, because you can't have one day you're on a, like, you know, really low carb, next day, oh, forget it, we're off, because obviously you have to get your body adjusted to it. Like, you're going on the diet, you have to come off the diet slowly. So we kind of wean down, and that also gives us time to see whether anything's going to creep back in. Because for some people, they might sort of wean down and their carbs might go up to like 50, 60 grams a day, and all of a sudden they'll start seeing some activity, or something gets worse. So therefore we take it back a step and then we leave it there and hold off and maybe try again in a year's time or 6 months' time if they want to. But we normally find, especially for the modified sort of diets, they tend to go down to kind of a low GI type healthy eating diet, and they come in. But then what people do after that, some people are very keen just to get off the diet altogether and then go back to eating whatever they want. Some people are more careful about their diets.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Again, there's definitely in our world, you know, everyone's got different ways of managing their health. So I can imagine that some people want it just for a quick fix and thinking, oh, hooray, let's just go back. And then other people will be more conscientious.
They don't want to think about it. They're dumb. That reminds them of a period of their life which was awful because of the seizures, but something came along, it sorted out, and now we don't want to think about it. We just want to move on and get on with our lives.
And this is even now, so we're talking post-ketogenic diet therapy, that these children too, and even into adulthood, potentially aren't needing to be on any medications anymore.
There are a small percentage. There's about 10% of children with intractable epilepsy that will go on the diet that will have the holy grail, and they'll be able to wean off, and they'll never have to worry about it again.
But then there's going to be some that will still need to be managed medically with medications.
There are some that may be, yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of them that go on there, they may find that the diet and a little bit of medication is what they need. So what we're always trying to do is do minimum treatment for maximum outcome. But it's the same. If you look at the diet like a medication, that's what the meds should be done, minimum amount of medication for maximum, you know, benefit. So it's quality of life benefit all the time. So we do that with diet. And there are some families that just need the diet alone. There are some families that need the diet and a little bit of medication. Normally, I think it's about the second biggest reason that people want to do the ketogenic diet when they've got epilepsy is to come off their meds, or at least reduce them. Mm. And in most cases that have a successful diet, then they can at least reduce their meds if they can't come off them altogether. but then we can normally see some reduction in medication. So the diet may be put in, maybe fine-tuned for a month to 3 months, depending on what your sensor is doing. Once they get happy with that, they then might start weaning down the medication. So that goes sort of hand in hand with the treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think this, it's so good that we're talking about this to help educate people, because epileptic medication is strong, it's hectic, it's affecting your neurology, and there's side effects that come with that. So anything that can be done to help you minimize how much you have to take, or if you have to take any, just using food is incredible. So,
well, funny enough, there's a section on our website where it's eating for health and well-being, where we have the lower carb eating but not ketogenic, where we give some guidance, and our dietitians has given some guidance on that. And basically, that's for people that are well controlled. I mean, 70% of people with epilepsy are well controlled on their medication, you know, and that's fine. Nobody's saying that they should come off all their drugs and things like that, but they want to feel better. Some are having side effects with those drugs. So sometimes just changing the way you eat and eating a more low GL diet, maybe a lower carb diet, will make them, they don't have to come off the meds, they're not changing their metabolism, but they will actually feel better and give them a better quality of life. So there is that side of what we do as well, which there is advice and places to go and books to read on that as well.
Are you just, we're coming up on our time here, but I'd love to find out, are you even getting into the situation where you're having adults inquire about dementia, Alzheimer's? Are you getting anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, for us, I wish, it comes down to money. Unfortunately, we're a charity and we have to fundraise for everything we do. We have some very generous, you know, fundraisers, but we always need more. And the fact of the matter is, if I had a clinic where I could employ a lot more dietitians and we could do a lot more case studies and work with the Alzheimer's charities and things like that, we could do a lot more. But what I need is a clinic three times the size in order to get it done, and the staff that, you know, I can bring in more passionate people to do it and to support those families that want to do it. Because obviously at the heart of everything Matthew's friends do is about those we serve, and we serve the people that are suffering from these chronic diseases and are looking towards the ketogenic diet to try and help that. And that's, I mean, we are a ketogenic diet, a medical ketogenic diet charity. We're, you know, that's all we do. This is all we focus on.
And that's exactly why I've got you on today, because that it is. You're a specialized niche of the keto world.
We're very passionate about it. Yeah. And we try to make the diet as practical as possible. That's part of our remit, is to make it as practical as possible to reach every family. And it doesn't matter where they were, where they live, where they are, what their resources are. I mean, we'll give every family that's going on a medical ketogenic diet a starter pack. We'll give them samples to try. We don't want things to be in the way. And we want every family that maybe find things a bit tough to work out and not sure how to do things. This is why we've got a 365-day support line. You know, that if they run into problems, or, you know, little Johnny drops half his dinner and mum's in a bit of a panic and doesn't know what to do, she can give us a ring and we can go, actually, what have you got there? Let's have a look what we can do. And just gives people the confidence to empower the families to do it for themselves.
Fantastic. Well, this interview is going to be published all around the world, so you're going to have loads of international listeners. And how best can people, you've mentioned already about emailing you, and you mentioned matthewsfriends.org as the website. Are there any other particular online channels that you would like to advertise to let people know, to create their awareness?
Oh, we have got Twitter pages, we've got Facebook pages, we've got Instagram pages. My tiny little team, every time we sort of go somewhere, we're trying to tweet, or, and I'm terrible at this. So the website is probably the best place to contact us through to start off with, but we do have a Matthew's Friends charity and Matthew's Friends Clinic Facebook pages, which are really busy. We have a YouTube channel. I'm just starting Instagram, so that's just now coming up. I'm starting to do photographs on that. And we have Twitter as well, which is all Matthew's Friends. You can find us.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to link to all these resources in the show notes for anyone listening if you want to find the direct links too. But Emma, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today and sharing some incredible knowledge. I've learned even more again about medical ketogenic diet today, and particularly just, yeah, that fascination, thinking how powerful it can be of someone just 2 years on the diet and, yeah, have that potential miracle cure. So it's
one of those things, and sorry for interrupting, it's a discussion I have with many doctors somewhere, where the non-believers, we're lucky now that we have a lot of people that do believe in diet, but the non-believers that seem so happy to change the biochemistry in the body using drugs, but then get confused with it when we're doing exactly the same basically with food. And yeah, it's one of those where you go, well, we're just doing it, but we're using food to do it and not a drug. One of those things.
Great. Well, I hope many more people actually consider a keto diet, especially if they're suffering medical conditions, neurological ones. And I'm sure this interview is going to help loads of people.
Good. Great. Been a pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Emma.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.